Hey, it's your Thursday gutter, and I've got Paul Copey Cope, I've got Harrier, and I've got Josh Sexton. We're in the bowels of our Anfield Rap Towers in Zurich. Why do I think Zurich? Is it UEFA in Zurich? Yeah. We're in the bowels on a fucking hot day in Liverpool, and there's noises outside you may hear in the background, which we're theorising. Josh thinks it's barrels being dragged. I think it's an actual dragon, but you can make your mind
up. It's also not that warm today. Everyone's saying it's warm.
I've been walking in the hot sun where the flags are a-cracking underfoot. But enough of that, because you don't want to hear about that and dragons. You want to hear about Liverpool's midfield and what happens to it next. Wow. Where do we start with Liverpool's midfield? Liverpool, as previous listeners will know, are pouring cold water on the idea of a further midfielder coming in, although it's with a caveat, unless someone buys Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. So I think it all equals Liverpool are going to buy another midfielder at some point. Neil and me and John Gibbo were debating, I'll start with you, Paul, on a previous show, about if Liverpool were to buy another midfielder, what variety, what flavour of midfielder would that be? And John and I were unanimous in thinking it should be a 6-8, a Jordan Henderson type figure, someone who could screen the defence, but who could also run up and down the pitch box to box if need be. A typical Klopp running midfielder, I would categorise that as. Neil, ever the rebel, bless him, was saying, oh no, it's got to be like an 8-10 type of guy, a very attacky kind of variety, if we get any at all, said Neil. So I wanted to sort of explore, are we well stocked or poorly stocked in the attacking side of our midfield? I would say, I'm going to distinguish here from, I'm going to say the lads who could play in a two aren't the attacking 8-10 variety. So the lads who could play in a two in our team at the moment are Fabinho, obviously, Henderson, obviously, but also Thiago and Naby Keita. So I'm sort of parking them from the very attacking morph of midfielder we're going to discuss here. So we've got, therefore, this is a very self-serving argument, some might have spotted already. I think our very attacking midfielders number Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Fabio Carvalho. Now, is that enough to go into a season with? Arguably it's for one position, but possibly two, because City play with two of these type of chaps.
Based on your very narrow leading question, like put me in a box before. Then the answer to your question is I'm not sure.
Come
back a step. I actually think the wider question is the interesting one for this. And I heard you say, and I've only started listening to that other show you're talking about. And you say something which is absolutely right, which is one of the great things about supporting this football club at the moment, is we haven't got a clue what they're doing behind the scenes, really. Like, it's great for content. As a football fan, not knowing what's going on, it's also great in one way and not great in another. It's great in the way that we can trust our football club to be doing stuff behind the scenes that we can't predict, which means they're doing everything for the good of us and for the good of them. Like, everything that comes out their mouth, you can literally go,
it's a bit like God.
A bit like God. Let's go there. Should we go down? Is that the route we're going down?
Dragons and God forming
for the good of us, for our sins, and we don't know what he's up to.
Yeah,
that's a good parallel, isn't it?
You're going to cause absolute chaos in this net, because who are you actually directly comparing to God in this setup? Is it John Henry?
And which God?
Let's not go there.
And which God?
And are you therefore in the pay packet of God? Is God the one who's paying you all these years?
What are we doing? It's my fault. I apologise.
So let's go back to the point.
God.
I think the bigger question is, like, who are we playing in midfield? What's the idea? What's the plan going forward? And how are we categorising all of the lads that are there? Because I already categorise Thiago, Keita and Henderson as eight.
Yeah.
So, and Henderson and Keita, 8/10 sometimes. Henderson, very much, you can put in any of these positions and play him in any of these roles and he'll do a really good job. Thiago, 8/6. Keita, 8/10. Fabinho is probably, I think he does play the 6/8. And when you do it like that, and then you add in the Curtis Jones and the Harvey Elliott, and if you did that, it's a bit like the computer game, isn't it? What would their positions be? I think the only logical conclusion is you're missing more of a six in all of those. Do you know, if you put into oh, yeah, each of those sure, players yeah. the numbers they can play, the only logical thing that you're missing is the six. There's loads of them can already play the 10, and there's loads of them can already play the 8. And as soon as I heard that Neil had said, we need another 8/10, my immediate reaction was partly what you started the question with, which was Neil just likes to take the opposite opinion sometimes. And good for him. That's one of the reasons we love him.
You won't listen to this. He's in Glasgow.
To be fair to Neil, it's a knock-on effect thing, though, I think. Because if you have... So Fabinho's out, for example. Henderson goes into the holding midfield position. Yeah. I think a lot of those ones on your list are left-hand side, or they favour the left-hand side, or I think they're better on the left-hand side. So then who are you bringing into the right as your like third good option? I think that's what Neil's sort of knock-on effect point is. It's the balance, isn't it? Rather than like the... He likes to talk about the functions, doesn't he? Rather than the replacements.
He does, doesn't he? It's so funny.
Backing Neil up without him being here.
It's interesting. Will he find time at Glastonbury to listen to this?
Probably will.
He will, only. Okay.
If he doesn't, can we just clip the bits where we're criticising him and send those to him? Don't send the bit where he gets defended. That'll just make him worse.
Just cut out Harriet's last bit.
Yeah. Just clip the bits about dragons and God and send that to him instead.
Yeah. He'll love that bit.
Yeah, he'll like that. I take your point, Paul. Okay. Let's just think this through. This is like a workshop. It's more a workshop than a show, and it's got some metaphysical aspects to it, but we're enjoying ourselves. No one can stop us because he's in Glastonbury. I think the right side, you're absolutely right. There is a dearth. There's only Jordan who can play on the right side, truly, and Harvey Elliott, interestingly. Kind of makes you wonder. Is it Harvey's? Is this one of the reasons why they wouldn't look to bring in someone on that side?
Well, Oxlade Chamberlain plays on the right occasionally, yes. too. So I think it's...
What a quandary we have.
I think for me, if you're talking about bringing someone in and we're talking about transfers, that all hinges on whether the club decides to sell Oxlade Chamberlain at the moment. And their intention at the moment is not to sell him. But I think if an offer good enough comes in, you have to think they'd say,
I believe that. It's their intention, in inverted commas.
To keep him.
Yeah.
I think I do at the moment, although he hasn't played. He didn't actually play since March, did he? So I think maybe towards the end of last season, they were thinking he'll move on. And then they went for a few midfielders. They went for Tchouaméni, didn't they? They didn't get him. So you have to think that Liverpool were wanting a midfielder at some point, even if now that's sort of changed and the situation's changed. But if they got a good offer from probably a Premier League team for Oxlade Chamberlain, I personally think they would take it. But then who are you bringing in for that same price bracket? So I think that's the situation they've got now. You're probably getting how much you think you'd get for an Oxlade Chamberlain in this transfer window, sort of a...
I think I've heard some mad valuations. I think 10 million would be okay.
I was about to say 10, but then who are you bringing in for that kind of...
That begs a question, right? Because We tend to start that inquiry by going, well, you wouldn't let Ox go unless you got a replacement, and that's what's been hinted at. But, you know, Klopp's loyal to his men, isn't he? And he wants to do right by them. If Oxlade-Chamberlain gets a I'll go to you on this one, Josh. If Oxlade-Chamberlain gets a proper offer that he likes financially and possibly more importantly for him at this stage, guarantees him game time from a West Ham or a Newcastle or whoever... He's not saying he'd force Liverpool's hands, but I think Klopp would be hard pushed to look himself in the mirror and say, I can't hold Alex back from getting football here. I've got to let him go. But would he let him go without being sure of a replacement? Would he say to himself, I think we can get through. I'd like to get a replacement, but I can't be sure because we have this policy where we get the right guy or no guy, but I can't stop Alex. Would he let those two things happen, i.e. postpone getting a replacement and letting Alex go?
This is where I think it's interesting, because the club have been very strategic in recent years, and in particular around making sure that any player they let go of a certain importance has a replacement. But if you think back sort of before, I'd maybe even argue three years ago, Liverpool were in a place where they were prepared to sell players who had sort of fallen down the pecking order with the view that there was someone younger coming up who they thought would be the sort of surefire replacement in a few years. And it usually led to, you know, fans of several sections of Liverpool support kicking off saying, oh, you can't guarantee that X player is going to be as good as Y, and arguing about ceilings and that kind of thing. But I would probably argue that in the position in the pecking order that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is, the club could conceivably turn around and say, we're going to sell Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for 10 to 15 million to West Ham or someone like that, because we believe that between Curtis Jones, between Tyler Morton, between Harvey Elliott, we've got at least one or two of them who we think will be a Liverpool midfielder for 10 to 15 years. And we don't believe that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain brings back that kind of value to Liverpool anymore in terms of his role of falling down the pecking order. Now, I would argue that if you're going to sell Oxlade-Chamberlain for the point that Harriet makes about, you know, the knock-on effect it has on the right-hand side of midfield, I would quite like to see somebody like an 8 to 10 come in. I suppose the argument that would kill all this is if you could find somebody who could play all three of the positions in the way that Jordan Henderson can, but then you're basically asking for Liverpool to go and find a unicorn of a midfielder, really, aren't you, that could play a 6, an 8 or a 10. But
isn't Abbey Keita a little bit of that unicorn if he stays fit? He's not done a sixth job for Liverpool.
Yeah. No.
He did do for Leipzig, but he has played both sides of left and right of the eight.
I think Liverpool's sixth position is really hard, and this is where they sort of make a rod for their own back, so that it's not a sixth position in the sort of ilk of anybody else in world football in terms of the amount of water carrying they have to do in that position. You know, seeing it in terms of how much Jordan Henderson's creativity has been stifled at times by playing there. We've seen it when Fabinho's had injuries and had to come back in and looked really off the pace and that kind of thing. We've seen how hard it is to play there, you know, with Tyler Morton when Tyler Morton had to fill in there last season. I mean, I never thought that Tyler Morton was capable of playing a six for Liverpool's under 23s, never mind the senior side, and he did it at times where Liverpool had all the ball. But you see when Liverpool don't have all the ball or when there's counter-attacking opportunities, it's a really, really tough position to play
as well. Exactly. Like if that number six isn't the right person there, the team, we've seen it doesn't operate as it should. It's like that hinge that's needed to protect the defence and allow the fullbacks to push forward, so you can't just shove Tyler Morton in big games and think, oh right, you'll be fine, because we want to keep Henderson on the right hand side of midfield. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's almost as if six is the most important position to cover.
I would argue it is, Rob, and there's a few players that I think, you know, could conceivably play there in certain games. Like, I think Thiago could conceivably play there in games we're going to have all the ball. I'd argue Keita is one of them as well. But if we're talking about, you know, God forbid injuries to Henderson and Fabinho, or injuries centre half, which means again we have to go back to those sort of sullen days of playing one of those guys at centre half, I wouldn't want to see Tyler Morton or Naby Keita or Thiago playing there for a prolonged period of time, and definitely not playing there against sort of bigger sides, if you will.
Okay, but if Jordan Henderson has got to increasingly share the sixth role with Fabinho, Paul, that means I think we could see a lot more of Harvey Elliott. I think we could see a lot more of Curtis Jones, by the way. I mean, I was just looking at the birthday dates of our midfielders. Next June, Thiago's 32, Henderson's 33, and Milner's 37. Now, I know we're beginning to count without James Milner anyway. But that's quite a lot of midfielders getting old pretty darn quickly. For a team that requires a lot of running from their midfield, it feels like whether it's this summer or next summer, Liverpool need not one but two bodies to restock that part of the pitch.
100%. And look, there is a huge amount of smoke and mirrors with Liverpool and magic tricks and distractions. And something we all often fall into, and I do still, is the whole one in, one out thing. Like the guy we're selling now, this happened. I was banging on about this a couple of years ago with the Gini and Alden thing. It was like, if we sell Gini, we need to buy someone else. And I was like, we've already bought someone else. Thiago's already here. And we all struggle with this concept that, like, the timing doesn't have to be exactly the same for the same type of player. So for me, if Oxlade-Chamberlain leaves, Oxlade-Chamberlain's replacement in the squad setup, sort of what everyone's saying already, is already there. For his role in the squad, it's a bit like, I was thinking about Minamino leaving. I thought Minamino leaving is actually, if and when he goes, is a bigger loss to our quadruple ambitions. I've got this thing now that Guardiola and Klopp, this isn't a one-off thing, they're going for the quadruple. This is like, if these two stay in their positions, this will be the holy grail, is one of us can win the quadruple. We've shown we can get to all the finals. But someone like Minamino in your squad's massively important for that. So when he leaves, the question is, okay, who plugs that gap? We don't necessarily need to buy someone. We can go, and I think we've already bought someone like a Carvalho, for example. But Elliot, Jones, you say to those boys, do you want to be the cup guy who can have a crack at scoring 10 goals in the cup competitions and helping us get to those two finals? That's a nice progression for one of those players, potentially. And then you've got the bigger picture question of, okay, and I think this is what FSG are doing brilliantly, again, always at the risk of being told you in that, you know, being paid by them, is imagine if we'd have sold Sadio Mane last year. Or imagine if we'd sold him this year and we hadn't signed Darwin Nunez already. Like, it, the Mane, and I'm not that I look at a huge amount of fallout these days online, but it doesn't feel like everybody's that upset about Mane going. It seems more like it's a, even journalists online, it's like a pat on the back. Thanks, Sadio, for being so great. That wouldn't have been how it was a year or two ago. And I think what they're doing brilliantly is sorting out, thinking ahead to what's coming up. This might sound like a mad analogy. I remember hearing Jeff Bezos talking about Amazon, and he said that he always thinks it's really funny when in his company people come and tell him how good the quarter has just been. And he's like, I stopped thinking about the quarter that we're in 2 years ago. He said, I'm planning for this quarter 2 years away from us. That's my job. I've got to be thinking that far ahead. A bit like snooker or chess. Mm. It's, how many analogies do you want? But yeah, it's like, how many moves ahead are you playing? And I think that's what we're doing constantly. So there will, I actually do think that's why there should be a big one this summer. Is not for now. It's for, City did it with Rodri. They bought Rodri knowing that Fernandinho could do another big year, and then after that his legs were probably going to fall off. So it gave Rodri time to settle in, and that's, look at our pattern. That's generally what we do.
That's an interesting point, because I remember me and you going back a while now, the days where Coutinho left, and all the, you know, obviously these conversations repeat, rinse and repeat endlessly. Just the names change. When Coutinho left, there was a sweat as to, well, how are we going to replace Coutinho? We all thought that must happen, and it actually never happened. In fact, I would say only when signing Diaz did we finally... And by replacing Coutinho, what I mean by that is we started that season with... Do you remember it was talked about in the media as a famous four? It was Salah, Mane, Firmino, because Salah had hit the ground running, and Coutinho. We had four amazing forward players, and you could play them all together, but often you just picked perm to three from four. We haven't been able to do that at all in Klopp's reign until the end of this January when we bought... you could argue we weren't able to do that until Jota came in. But even then, I think Jota has been a slow burner. I would say when we had... It felt like with Diaz, we truly had another Salah, Mane-level footballer on our books again. I do wonder... I don't know. Do you think Diaz was Mane's replacement, or do you think Nunez is? How do you look at it? I suppose what I'm asking here in a roundabout way, and I'm thinking aloud what I'm saying, is there's quite a few front players who are going out. This, you mentioned Minamino, Origi's going, Mane's gone, and Chamberlain's a likely leaver. That's 3.5 attacking players. Some of them helped us win two cups, as you said, and kept us on course for a quadruple. Have we physically bought enough bodies in already to be able to compensate for that squad depth alone, assuming those lads are all gone by the end of the summer?
I think probably in the attacking areas, because, and I do think something to add into that is, I think when they're buying players, they're generally buying with a view to, we buy them now and in a year's time, they're irregular. They're at regular and not irregular. And when you get a Diaz, it's just bonus time. It's like fabulous, like to drop a lad in and for him to hit the ground running. And at the same time, they will not be expecting Diaz to maintain that.
But let me just interrupt you slightly. It was the bonus that actually took us to the cusp of a quadruple in most people's estimation, was it gave us that.
If he didn't hit the ground running, we wouldn't have got to that level. That's I think what's concerning slightly for me next season is that you've got all these players that, okay, they're not starting every single game. Sorry, Paul, I've interrupted you, but they're not starting every single game. They're playing in the odd cup games, and they're playing in the Premier League games as well. But we still felt like in certain games towards the end of the season, 63 games was it we played, that we weren't sure who were the freshest bodies and we weren't sure who was going to be fit. And that was with the squad depth that we had, with Minamino, with Origi, with Oxlade-Chamberlain on the bench. Oxlade-Chamberlain was available for most of last season, not used that much, but he was available. Yeah. If you're getting rid of these players who are consistently available, even if they're just coming on the bench or even if they're just playing in cup games, who are you replacing them with? Are you asking the main people to just keep going again and again and again? I don't think that's realistic. Are you using younger players and hoping that they'll be all right? Are you using new signings like Carvalho and hoping they'll hit the ground running? There's a lot of hoping in that scenario if you're letting these people go who are proven to do well in those games.
Yeah, Paul, I agree with Harriet, Paul. I think Diaz showed that the attacking pool, let's use that area of the pitch as an example, needed another body more than we were agreeing it needed. Because let's say at the start of last season, we were going into the season with Salah, Mane, Firmino, Jota, and then the squad lads, Origi and Firmino. And everyone thought that was pretty much okay. Of course, we were all forever crying out to sign somebody else exciting on top of that. But we all more or less thought that was enough to do what Liverpool needed to do, because we'd seen Liverpool win a league, a European Cup with that kind of balance. But when we added Diaz, it was a taste of an even higher plane, wasn't it? And I wonder, do you think Liverpool are accepting that is now the new bar, that we do have to maintain a squad with that bit more depth than we realised? I think's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yes, I do. And to answer your previous question, I do think Diaz was Mane's replacement. And so what we've done is, and I do think this is what's happened with our squad over time, we're constantly raising the bar of it. And that's why this is an ever-evolving conversation. We've talked about this in the past with the likes of Harry Wilson's, like those types of players, and you feel sorry for them. Because when Harry Wilson was a kid, he was nailed on to be a first-team player at Liverpool. Like when he was coming through with that era. And by the time he got to that level, we had just gone into the stratosphere and you're done then. You're just not going to reach it. Diaz comes in to replace Mane and then we buy Nunes on top. So if you take a step back, I think the big one that everyone's forgetting, and we all do this as well, this happened with Gini a few years ago. He had a dip and everyone just wrote him off. It was like when we were talking about the following season, I remember saying, I very rarely get things right, so it's worth remembering when I do. I remember saying, everyone's forgotten about Gini. Watch out for him this season, because no footballer has just a steady trajectory as a career. They'll all have dips and then the best ones come back again. And the big one everyone's forgetting about is Jota. Like, there was a spell in the middle of last season where Jota was absolutely phenomenal playing down the middle. And when you look at, if you just look on paper at our forward line now, Salah, Firmino, Diaz, Jota, Nunes as your five. And then behind them, there's debate about Carvalho, about where he'll play and what he'll do. But he is an attacker, however you want to label him. Harvey Elliott is more of an attacker than anything else, however you want to label him. That's an embarrassment of riches in the forward positions. You add into that the five subs and the ability to rotate these in game as well as game to game, I think that's enough to get that's enough for a quadruple assault for me, just in that. Without any, you don't even need to take the step below that, which we've got strength even there with the kids who are coming through. I think that's enough in those forward positions, and I think that does add into the bigger picture of how will we play more next season. And I do think we will play with more attacking players on the pitch next season. And to take it back to the six conversation, I think one of the biggest things for a six that we need, which I do think we still need cover for, is when we've got all the ball at home at Anfield against teams, like, and it's 90% of teams we'll play against, the one tactic they've got, which has been seen to work, is to hit us on the break, long diagonals, hit us quick, expose us when both of our fullbacks are high. And when that happens, that's when the lecture, if you're playing Thiago as a six or you're playing Tyler Morton as a six, you really struggle. You need a big lad there with pace, to be very basic. And I think that's what we're lacking in this squad, is that spare man.
Okay, Josh, I want to explore just a slightly different angle on this one. I think I'm broadly on board with Paul's idea that we have the numbers in the squad. And I think most of us sort of agree with numbers now. You know, although we're losing an Origi, a Minamino, potentially a Chamberlain, who else have we lost? And Milner's sort of, you know, in the twilight phase of his career. It seems like we have repopulated the squad, but they're very young, I would argue. And I'm going to cite Fabio Carvalho, who's touching 20, Harvey Elliott, who's 19, Curtis Jones, who's just 21. I'm going to throw Darwin Nunez, who's 22, and now Calvin Ramsey, who's 19. All these lads are, in this particular season, are moving into the phase of being very, very important to the squad, and that's an interesting challenge. Is there anybody else who are not? I mean, Cade Gordon, I know you'd say, but in midfield in particular, is there anybody who you see beginning to show and become an option for Liverpool as a midfielder, or who's someone who not as a regular, but becoming an option, maybe comes off the bench in league games as one of the five, someone coming through? You know more about the young teams than most of us.
Yeah, I think it's tough because there's an extent to which Liverpool will always look at it like a succession plan, and I don't think they would ever like the term replacements in the way that we sort of use it, and the journalists tend to sort of use the word replacements as well, because what Liverpool want to do is have the bodies around to at least learn off the top guys in their squad, but also to be able to look down the line. So it's interesting you've just mentioned how young those options are, because you also mentioned how old the sort of first team or the senior options in the squad are as well, and I think that's quite deliberate from Liverpool, is that you've got guys like Jordan Henderson who's going to be around for a couple more years, Thiago's going to be around for a couple more years, Milner's obviously just re-signed up for another year, even Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita are sort of in the primes of their career. I'd say maybe Keita is sort of on the younger part of that, and then you've got these young lads coming through who Liverpool hope will be their midfielders in 10 years time, but they don't hope they'll be their midfielders in 2 years time, at least in a sort of 50 game sense. And I think that's what Liverpool have done the whole time. But you look back and realise their replacement. So you mentioned about Coutinho before, that he didn't really have a replacement. You could almost make an argument that with hindsight, Oxlade-Chamberlain was Coutinho's replacement.
Yes,
that they just got in early.
Yeah.
And that's what Liverpool seem to keep doing. And they're hedging their bets as well. So I think the Calvin Ramsey signing is a really clever one by Liverpool, because it allows them to sell Nico Williams. It allows them to loan out Conor Bradley in the way they have. And it allows them to take a bank on this kid that he may come good, but if not, they may just sell him for a profit in a couple of years time anyway, and then Conor Bradley may come back from his loan and find form, or they may just have to go and sign somebody else and sort of start that cycle again. But Liverpool have got really clever at making those kind of signings, but then also making the signings that become future replacements, or bringing lads through from the academy who could become their future replacements, and then they can just go and, if that goes wrong, go and sign somebody else and then sell Tyler Morton in a few years time for a big profit. That's what I think what Paul was saying before is why I sort of feel so at peace that if Liverpool turn around and stick to their word and say, look, we said we weren't going to sign another midfielder this summer, and the window closed and not sign another midfielder, I would feel at peace, because I think in a few years time we would look back at this window and say, oh well, with hindsight, X was the replacement for Y, and that kind of thing.
Well, Diaz was meant to be a summer signing as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. Like,
we'd look at things differently if he came in this window.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Rob, to sort of believe that Diaz is the Mane replacement. I think you're right to believe that Nunes could be the Salah replacement if Salah was to move on next season, but then even if Salah isn't to move on, I think that's where Liverpool will see it as though they're getting the bonuses, is when the lad who they expect to leave, or who they make sort of moves to negate for the fact they might leave, then doesn't leave. So for example, Wijnaldum, they may have thought they could sell Wijnaldum in a normal summer that wasn't COVID, when that summer came around, rather than losing him on a free, because they could probably have got some money for him in a non-COVID world. They went and got Thiago because he became available, and then they had Genie around for another year, and it meant they had time then, and obviously Thiago's injuries don't help, but they had time then to bed Thiago into the team, and Genie was still, I think, had the most appearances in the squad that season. So I think Liverpool are really, really clever in the way they're going about and doing their business, and I think that's what you will see again this summer, but it might not become apparent for another couple of years.
Can I just quickly, Sonia, very quickly, because I was trying to push you for names actually from the academy, because
Balogun would be my one. So Balogun would be my one who I would say currently in the academy picture should be knocking on the first team door in a few years' time. It's really tough, because increasingly Liverpool's academy is becoming full of really raw talent. The under 23 side is a really quite young under 23 side, and it's a bit of a thing that's happening in English football generally, because City's under 23s are dead young as well. Their under 18s and our under 18s are also quite young. There's more sort of really raw products who you don't see being anywhere near the first team picture, and then suddenly Harvey Blair starts in a League Cup game last year, and I would have never seen Harvey Blair being anywhere near the first team for a couple more years. So I would say that Balogun from a physical and a technical sense is the one that fits the bill to become a future Liverpool first team player, but even then I would still say he's a year out from making regular benches for me, or making League Cup appearances, and he's probably 2 years out from whatever the next step is beyond that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've painted an interesting picture of how Liverpool's expectations in midfield require a degree of maturity, really.
Yeah.
We're going to have to live with uncertainty, I think. That's the key thing for this season coming that maybe we haven't had to deal with for a couple of years, is we're going to have to go into the season trusting that the team behind the scenes know a lot more than we do. And I think we can sort of bank on that. We don't know exactly who the new signings are going to, where they're going to play, you know, what position, like Carvalho. We don't know where he sits in the team. We don't know what younger talent within the squad they've got their eye on stepping up. We don't know how much Harvey Elliott's going to play, how much Curtis Jones is going to play. There's a lot of people with question marks over them. And I think that's probably why we feel like we need an extra body, because we actually don't know the capabilities or the situations around a lot of the players we already have.
And I think that's what we're prepared to do as a fan base, isn't it? You know, Paul mentioned before about Mane and the fact that we've been able to just sort of go, you know, we're sad that we're losing a player like Sadio, but we're not sad in terms of we don't think that everything's just going to fall apart at the seams. Now there is that trust, and there is that, as Harriet says, that sort of
evidence as well, exactly, isn't there, that it works and that this system works.
Let me pose a question to you, Harriet, then. How much is a 20-year-old highly rated central midfielder going to play next season, the Liverpool buy, called Jude Bellingham. 20 years, he's 19.
Another element, isn't it, that we're clearly waiting for next season when we think we should be able to sign Bellingham. We know that it's not going to happen this year because Haaland left and Dortmund won't want to sell another one of their star young players. But he would be the perfect solution to everything we've been talking about.
Would he? He's 20.
I personally think he would, because I think he has that sort of defensive ability, but he's so exciting in an attacking sense. He's so creative. I think he would come in, and yes, he's young, but he's already shown how much he's capable of, and he'd be the next big sort of star project for Klopp. And him coming in next summer, you'd look at the age of the starting midfield, as you mentioned, he would bring that right down. He would be like the next person that you could see leading that midfield, I think.
And Liverpool could look at it, sorry, you're trying to go over to Paul, but Liverpool could look at it in the sense of, you know, Curtis Jones was Milner's replacement maybe, or maybe there's another person I'm sort of missing in the squad there. You could look at it and say Tyler Morton could end up being Henderson's replacement to an extent, but there's still a few years to sort of go in that one. And then someone like Jude Bellingham could end up being the Thiago replacement, because Thiago's contract must be up in sort of like 2025, 2026 sort of era. So if they bring in a 20-year-old Bellingham and promise him, you know, a certain amount of appearance in a season, they've still got Thiago around, they've still got Henderson around, they'll give Bellingham that time to be able to become a proper Liverpool option.
I think, Paul, there are some signposts that Liverpool are, that Klopp is looking to trust much younger players in first 11 positions in the future. I know we're all very focused on it, and we have been in this show in particular. It's a squad game. But when you get to European Cup finals, European Cup semi-finals, or the running we've just seen, it's quite easy to see where the pecking order is. There's 11 lads who were protected, 11 or 12, and then in the lesser games, other lads came in. I mean, I'm picturing a Liverpool next season, and I'm envisaging a 23-year-old Ibrahima Konate being a regular centre-back for Liverpool in a position that's typically been populated by much maturer players. I'm looking at a hypothetical situation where a 20-year-old Jude Bellingham is picking up as many minutes as any other central midfielder. He's a first pick in big games, if he is the player we think he is. I'd caveat it with that. I'm looking at 23-year-old Darwin Nunez leading Liverpool's attack in an era where the average age has tended to be more like 27, 28, you know, in the golden phase. Trent, youngish, but, you know, are we not just youthening up the team for the future's benefit, but for the immediate is what I'm saying. Are we going for, are there signs of a deliberate policy to actually have a younger team on the pitch more often than not, than we've been used to in the past?
I think potentially, I think there's, and I think Klopp and his team would probably say this, there's too much, I don't think they really care about how old someone is at all. I don't think it matters, because I think there are other factors that go into how good a player is and whether they're ready for our type of team than just how long they've been on this planet. Like Bellingham is a great example of this. Bellingham made a great decision to go to Germany. Think about, so he's 19, how many first team games has he played in one of the top three leagues in Europe, and Champions League games and international football as a result of that for his age? He must be comparable to many lads who are 3, 4, 5 years older than him. So his age, I don't think, is that big a deal. Trent's another great example of that. Like, when he first dropped into the team, you could see the rawness, you could see the mistakes. The United game jumps out to me. There was a Palace game, I think, against Zaha, where he just got roasted. And at the time, you could see Klopp going, well, I know you're all focusing on this game and that mistake. I'm thinking 2 years down the line when this lad's going to be an absolute superstar because of these experiences. And the likes of Bellingham, for all we've discussed about buying a six, or I've said about buying a six, the fact that Bellingham seems to be that, and this happens every now and then, I think you said it in the agenda and maybe on another show, every now and then there seems to be a player where sort of world football just goes, that deal's done. Like, no one even gets involved. No one else makes a bid. No one else. And it was a bit like that with Van Dijk. It was like, okay, that deal's been scuppered because of the whole going up for a ride in Blackpool and stuff like that. But we're going to buy Virgil van Dijk and it's worth waiting for. I think, and especially factor into this, all the moving parts, we've got a weird season coming up with the World Cup in the middle of it, which is going to be, they've got to factor that, all of that in itself. I think they're doing it. If we could get Bellingham this year, fantastic. But actually, if he's nailed on for next year, he's another Van Dijk. We're not going to buy anybody else. It's pointless. We can get through this weird season with Fabinho and Henderson rotating around the six, give Morton a few games in there. There'll be games where you can patch it up in other ways with the two. You know, even a Thiago and a Keita in there when you're dominating, and it goes against what I said earlier about the balls over the top and stuff. But there'll be games where you think, we can take that risk. And I think that's what they'll do. They'll say, we can manage this season. Bit like what Harriet was saying before, we can manage this season with the risks because we know we're going to get Bellingham next year. And again, I think it's hard because we are so good. So I think, especially for football, those of us who've been watching this football team for a long time now, you almost want us to make the most of every second of every month of every season, because this won't last forever. As well as that, Klopp and his team are saying, well, you know, if we don't get the midfielder this year, but it makes us better next year, that's still the game they're playing. They're still longer term thinking, which is healthier for us all round.
Yeah, Harry, I mean, what was I going to say? Bellingham, is he worth waiting for? Yeah, I think he is probably worth waiting for. And I agree with Paul. I think the age thing doesn't matter when they're that good. Do you think next year, it does tick a lot of boxes if you think about it from a deal point of view, because by then he'll only have 2 years left on his contract. So I don't think Liverpool have to be overly concerned that the touted 100 million euro value now is actually going to increase, because Dortmund will be seeing the end in sight in terms of the opportunity window for getting some money for this young player.
Yeah, well, they want to get money in before his contract runs down to just a year left, and then they're panicking, and then they're sort of trying to come up with a situation where they have to sell him, and people, other clubs know that they've got to do that. So I think next season does feel like a good time, and look, we've shown with Van Dijk, especially, like Paul mentioned, that we're willing to wait for those signings, and they'll be thinking now anyone they do sell, like the money we get from Minamino, that can all just be added to the pot, that hopefully next season will be guaranteed that this midfielder coming through. And on the age thing, I don't necessarily think it is a problem, because as well as what Paul said, you've got the players with experience around him. So you'll still have, you'll have a 23-year-old Konate, but you'll have a Van Dijk next to him still, and you'll have the goalkeeper, and you'll still have that experience alongside them in midfield. And that's, for someone like Bellingham, that's got to be such an attractive proposition to come into the team and know that.
That's why Trent worked, despite his rawness.
Exactly, because he had that backup and that feeling that, okay, even if I mess up here, I know I've got enough experienced players around me that will sweep up the pieces. But for someone like Bellingham coming in to a Liverpool team, knowing that for at least a couple of seasons he'll be able to learn from Thiago, play alongside these incredible players, and then have their manager in Jurgen Klopp as well, who will dedicate so much time to his development, because we know that's what Klopp does with young players in particular, and especially ones he targets and wants to bring in transfer windows. He dedicates a lot of time to their development. Why would he not want to come there? So yeah, it's interesting that no one else has really been linked with him. And yeah, like you mentioned, 2 years left on his contract next summer. It feels like the ideal time. And also have another year experience in the Bundesliga under his belt in a really good Dortmund side, where he's playing a lot of games. He's not being bought in occasionally. He's started the majority of games in that side. So another year under his belt in that league would set him up really well for a move to Liverpool. And it would make sense from a club and financial aspect as well.
Okay, Josh, last word is yours. Reading the runes, analysing the market, do you think Jude Bellingham to Liverpool is a deal that's been done behind the scenes?
I don't know if it's a deal that's been done as such, in that I don't know if Dortmund would be prepared to sort of commit away, you know, massive assets to them. I guess what I'm saying is Dortmund wouldn't be prepared to put a number on Jude Bellingham for next summer right now, because they would say this season is going to have a, you know, a lot of variable on the upward curve that that price could take. I guess in Liverpool's minds, they you know, may have had contact with the player. That there could be all sorts of things going on behind the scenes in that sense. And they're monitoring and they're getting the feeling that, you know, next summer that could be a deal that they could go and get done, so long as Dortmund play ball. I guess the stumbling block always in these scenarios is what happens between the two clubs, and that's where I could see again there potentially being issues. But Dortmund have shown themselves, you know, over years and years now to be very worthy sellers at the right kind of price, and I believe that next summer Liverpool will be able to come with the right price for that.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks to Harriet and Josh, who've been with me in the dungeon at Tor Towers, and the dragon has not got us, I'm pleased to say. Thanks to Paul, who is somewhere, I think, let's say he's at Paul International Corporation boardroom in Las Vegas. Thanks, Paul, for joining us from there. It's been a great show, and I think we're going to join you. Actually, I'm not doing next Tuesday. I'm away. But
You'll have Neil for a gutter next Tuesday.
Yeah, but he slags me off good style. I'll be listening. Don't you worry. See you, Paul. See you, guys. See you, everyone, soon. Bye.